Welcome back to another insightful episode of Textual Chatter. Today, we're diving deep into starting and advancing your cybersecurity career, focusing on one of the most essential tools in the industry. That's right, Splunk. Join our host, Unri, and special guest, Kenneth, founder of Ellington Cyber Academy, and also a seasoned cybersecurity consultant, as they explore everything from mastering Linux and scripting to the importance of certifications and hand-on experience. In this episode, we'll cover the journey to becoming a Splunk architect, the critical role of Linux proficiency, and the value of strong soft skills for client communication. Listen in as Kenneth shares his experience from creating effective detection rules using NIST and MITRE frameworks to managing data ingestion and the ins and outs of different Splunk certifications. We'll also touch on the potential impact of AI on cybersecurity roles, the high costs associated with some Splunk certifications, and the hands-on practice necessary for excelling in this field. Whether you're a seasoned pro or starting out, this episode is packed with practical advice, personal anecdotes, and expert insights to help you navigate and succeed in your Splunk and cybersecurity career. So grab your headphones and let's get started. Yo, what's good, everybody? Let me back up from the mic some. Welcome back to Textual Chatter. This has been another episode, or I guess installment, of the Textual Talk series, where we have these live sessions where we discuss things about getting into cybersecurity. And so today's live show will be about Splunk, particularly Splunk ES, and also dealing with SOAR, with the owner and founder of Ellington Cyber Academy, Kenneth Ellington. And so this is what we're going to do, guys. We're going to probably just have, it's probably going to be real laid back, nothing too forced upon you guys. But if there's a certain comment that you really want answered quickly, hit the super chat. All super chats will be read first. And any question after that, we'll get to eventually. So shout out to our watchers that are on Twitter and LinkedIn. If you want to, like I said, get your question read first, come over to YouTube, leave us a super chat. And if you ain't subscribed yet, go ahead and subscribe. I got some episodes that'll be dropping soon. Matter of fact, let me put this banner up real quick for the Patreon real quick. Let me see. Yeah. Join the Patreon. I got an episode that'll be dropping on the Patreon tonight that probably won't come out to sometime next week. So if you want to see that, it's a special guest. You're not going to guess who it is. So you'll definitely want to check out that. But let me bring Kenneth up here. Kenneth, what's going on, bro?
Nothing much. Doing pretty well.
That's good, man. So what you came to teach the good folks today about cybersecurity and let alone Splunk, or you know what? Let's do this. Some of you may not remember Kenneth. He was on my podcast, I think like what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago, like this month, actually.
Yeah, so like 2 years ago. But for the people who don't remember you, could you go ahead and like just briefly introduce yourself?
Sure, thanks. So my name is Kenneth Ellington. I'm the founder and CEO of Ellington Cyber Academy. I've been in cybersecurity for around 6 years now. I currently work at a Big Four accounting firm, so I do SIEM and SOAR consulting there. So I work with Fortune 100 firms designing SIEM and SOAR solutions for it. Then for ECA, my other business, I basically teach SIEM and SOAR and endpoint solution technologies towards different clients and different students and individuals that want to learn and boost their cybersecurity career, basically.
Thanks for that, bro. So what's the first thing you want to cover? I do not have the description up. Let me go right here, because I know I put some good topics that you said, some of your main talking points. I guess the first thing is kind of covering to them about, you know, there's this thing, like, of course, Splunk is used for a lot of different things, but in the context we're talking about Splunk ES enterprise security, and it's used as a SIEM in most security environments. Can you explain to them what a SIEM is and why it's pivotal for a company's success and not getting breached?
Sure thing. So SIEM stands for Security Information Event Monitoring System or Management System. And it's basically where all your endpoint devices generate logs and events on it. And for a lot of reasons, for compliance purposes, companies will have to monitor that for a certain time period. So they may have to retain that data for maybe a year, 3 years, or 5 years, right? And then the SIEM platform, which is what I manage, it will ingest all that data. It will correlate it. You can put detection rules on it. There's also a lot of new AI features with a lot of these SIEM platforms that you can do to automate a lot of different tasks. So it's pretty pivotal because, for me, that's where all my client data basically sits. So that's how I see everything. That's how I manage a lot of the different platforms for it. So if they don't have one, it makes it harder for me to actually individually log on to each individual device. For like a larger, like really big corporations, they have thousands of devices. So is it really feasible to do that?
Yeah. And just imagine how many like if somebody was to just open Event Viewer on their computer and just look at all the events that's just coming out there, one machine, imagine thousands of machines on the network and how many events go in. And that's where a SIEM really shines at, aggregating all that data into things that are actually important for you to see and not all the noise. I think that's the big one that people mess up in. Like, ain't nothing worse than going in an environment. I did this thing on LinkedIn where, you know, it's like the top security voice thing, but it's really, if you come in on enough articles, you'll get the little badge.
Yeah.
And it was a question about SOAR. And I was saying, hey, a lot of companies don't even need SOAR. They really just need to get their SIEM straight. And a lot of people like that, because a lot of times, and you probably witnessed this, you're going to an environment or a different company, and the SOAR sometimes is that selling piece they sell those clients on. Yeah, we got XOAR, we got Phantom. Just to say that they have it to get a contract or do some work, when in all honesty, it's not set up to do any type of automation. So it's just wasted money. You just got it just so you could possibly get some more money.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm doing this right now for my client. They want to get a SOAR platform, and I'm like, y'all are like a level one, right? You guys don't have any baseline of what's going on inside your environment, no documentation, right? So if you don't have that, it's kind of pointless to have a SOAR platform. My analogy is like, if someone flooded your house, Hunter, because there's like a hurricane that hit Dallas, and your house is flooded, your roof is gone, you wouldn't go towards a new construction worker or contractor and say, all right, I want a brand new pool. You're going to be like, well, the guy's going to be like, well, there's no walls or tiles on your floors, right? You're nothing's here, right? So you need to get that fixed first. That's why normally you'll have a SIEM platform or you have like an XDR platform, right? The SOAR platforms will basically orchestrate all your other tools, so you're able to automate and organize your incident response process a lot cleaner. So if you don't have all the rest of the stuff fixed and organized first, it's not really going to be helpful.
Exactly. Because you know something else is, it's nothing worse than, or you got the SIEM, but now you got the different platforms or tools feeding into the SIEM, and they're sending you garbage.
Yeah. It happens quite often.
Yeah. It's like, really? So you said something, I couldn't key on it because I was having to deal with something in the background. But let's do this then. Even though, like, I know our title, our thumbnail says, is Splunk the best? Outside of Splunk, what other SIEM platforms have you worked on? Because most people say, well, he's only saying Splunk's the best because he's probably only used Splunk. So that's why he's going to say Splunk is the best. Have you used any other SIEM platforms before?
I've used QRadar, which is absolute trash. I'll never use it. I've used that, and then Microsoft Sentinel I've used as well. So those are the three main platforms that I've used for like SIEM stuff. For SOAR, I've used IBM Resilient. Again, do not use IBM products in my personal experience. I don't like the service or anything about them. I also use XSOAR, and then I use Phantom as well.
Yeah, Tevian just said something about Google Chronicle, and I've still yet to use Chronicle. I do want to take a stab at it. I wonder what Google plans on doing with that. And you know, CrowdStrike's going to be coming out with their own SIEM solution.
Oh, yeah, I'll block scale. I've done some training with it as well. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. For me, I've used Splunk, QRadar. I've used ArcSight. I've used Kibana. Chauncey, have I used any other ones? Oh, McAfee's. Well, I don't even know if it exists anymore, but it used to be called like Nitro. Trash. But out of all those, Splunk would be the best. I use Sentinel too. And all those, Splunk would be the best that I've used so far when done correctly. Especially if you want to know, if you want to see Splunk functioning on its highest level, go to like a Splunk conference, and they're gonna have all the add-ons and everything that you could do with Splunk and really show you how it could function when it's pushed to the max. But yeah, I would say Splunk. But you know what? QRadar isn't bad if it's done rightly.
Yeah,
I know one of the biggest issues we always had with QRadar was it was dropping logs. Like that was like a big issue with QRadar dropping logs, but it's fairly simple, but it's too many clicks. Too many clicks.
That definitely is the case. It was odd. I didn't have like the features that I wanted with it. And then I remember I was on call, it was like during Thanksgiving, and they're like, well, QRadar isn't working. I'm like, oh, well, I don't have access to fix it. They're like, well, I don't care. You still need to fix it. I'm like, I don't have access. I can't do anything to fix it. I'm like, what do you want me to do? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I briefly used Elastic. I agree. A lot of those things could be good if they have a dedicated person. Like, some of the better environments I came from was like everybody, well, Optiv, when we were on the client, and Tavion can attest to this. Every tool had its own platform engineer. So Splunk engineers, we had people for CrowdStrike, we had people for Tanium, we had people for, at the time we were using Imperva, Tripwire, anything that was feeding into the SIM, we had like a platform engineer specifically just for that. And that made getting stuff done in there like super easy. So when it comes to SOAR, which one are you taking? You taking Phantom or are you taking XOR?
I would say, in my opinion, I think XOR has a better threat intelligence feed to a lot of their stuff. I do like Splunk Phantom's integration piece a lot better. Especially I use Splunk a lot. So this depends on what your needs are, really. XOR, I would say, is the most popular platform for SOAR automation, and then probably Splunk Phantom is second.
Nice. See, I've never used Sumo Logic. I've never used Sumo Logic or Chronicle or Panther. So yeah, I'm not. So fun fact, yeah, I've heard about Tons. Who uses Tons? Was it Cloudflare? I think Cloudflare uses it for automation. It's either Cloudflare or Samsara. I can't remember. I got to look in my notes. One of them two, they were using it because I asked them about what they were doing for automation.
Yeah, Tons is really cool because they use like JSON stuff for their automation piece.
Who?
Tons.
Yeah. I couldn't hear because I was talking. we got a couple of questions over here. Let me see if I can find some questions over here to answer. Let's see. He said, I'm eager to learn more about cybersecurity opportunities here. He has a strong background in the field of MBA and cybersecurity. Okay, he didn't have a question. Let's see. It doesn't work like that. Which Splunk would one need to be a SOC? I'm assuming you're saying a SOC analyst. Just getting a Splunk cert by itself is not going to someone's going to walk up to you and give you a bag of money to come monitor, their tools. You still got to understand how to interpret and correlate the data and make informed decisions based on what you see. So that's not like the only thing, but it can help you if you are very good at using Splunk, because you can start pivoting into doing some other things with them, whether it's engineering or DE type of work, if they need help with that. So along with dashboards and stuff like that, that's a pet peeve of mine. Environments not having enough dashboards to use.
And for me, it's either that or they have way too many. None of them are monitored. So it makes my system super slow. I'm like, why is this here? They didn't even know it was here. But I guess from the cert perspective, I would say, depends what industries you work in, especially for finance, because a lot of my clients are finance. They'll require you to have like a core user power user certification to get that level of access for the systems. So if you had that ahead of time, it does help out with the hiring process, in my opinion.
Right. And while we're on the subject of the Splunk cert, let's briefly talk about, I guess, some of the things that y'all do at ECA that could help people get these certifications and, talk about maybe some testimonials of people landing some jobs and just some other stuff. So, the floor is yours.
Awesome. So, yeah, because Harney, you were on our capstone, I think last year around December, like you and Day. So the capstone is like the coolest part about the program. So what we'll do is we'll bring in people like Henry, Day, maybe Tay, for example, and we'll make them basically hiring managers or judges for inside of our program, right? We have various partners that work at Palo Alto, Accenture, AWS, Deep Washington, a few. Then they'll judge you on the specific capstones, right? So the capstones are super hard. I make it that way because my job is just hard a lot of the time. So it's basically a technical project. So you'll basically, let's say, build out a distributed Splunk environment with like clusters and stuff. And it's your job to give a technical presentation as to why the solution will help out our client environment, right? The reason it's so hard is a lot of people don't have the proper soft skills. They don't know how to actually articulate their desires and wants for how to get a solution towards like an executive. Because in my experience, if you're not able to catch your attention within the first like 60 or 90 seconds, I've seen CEOs like walk off the door and just like leave the meeting because like it's a waste of my time. I don't care about this, right? I have five other meetings I have to go to. So we teach our students how to have those specific skill sets. Then from like a testimonial perspective, Mercedes Henderson or Sadie on Twitter, she was one of my students and we got her a Splunk engineering job. So she's been really happy with that. I've worked with Courtney Wright as well. We helped her triple her salary like a 9-month period. Hazel Miranda works at Samsung now. She was unemployed for 9 months and then we helped her get a job at Samsung as a QA engineer. Tyrone works at ReliaQuest now. He was a senior analyst. Now he's a cybersecurity engineer. He lives in Vegas now. John was like a help desk person. Now he's like an information risk manager, I believe, at Lincoln Financial. So we had a lot of different testimonials from different people. And if you guys have questions about it, feel free to reach out towards me or one of them on LinkedIn. We're more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to post the link that I have in the description. I'm going to pin it to the chat so people can click on it. I got a link, guys. So if you want direct access to some ECA stuff, you can do that. So you started off, I think, strictly in Publix. You were doing, I know Splunk stuff. Were you doing some analyst work or was it engineering work there?
Also threat intelligence analyst. So I did MITRE research for different malicious activities inside of our environment. It was really cool. I got to actually shadow all the departments in Publix. And I found out really quickly, I don't want to do red teaming work. But I don't want to write a book every time I do my task.
Hold on. Say that again. You don't want to do what?
I don't want to write a book every time I do my tasks. Because with red teaming work, a lot of it is purely, it's like a lot of documentation, right? Because if I pay you $100 million to basically tear my environment down, you can't be like, I don't know how to do that. I kind of did it, right? I want step-by-step instructions about how it happened. And if you can't do that, then you're in breach of your contact, basically.
No, I'm glad I wanted you to emphasize that because, I mean, pretty sure you've talked to a lot of people that say they want to do red team. I have people that do console and say, I want to be a pen tester. And I always say, why? I was like, do you think just the whole day you're going to be hacking away and doing all this cool stuff? And that's what they pretty much think. And I say, all right, well, I want you to think again and see what they are actually paying that company for those penetration tests and that write-up. And so that's the part. And I like earlier when you were talking about you're breaking down the strategy that you guys do with the capstone. It was pretty cool. I'll talk about my experience of actually doing that, guys. Because one of the hardest things to do for people trying to pivot is simulating a real work environment and you being able to be comfortable in an interview on your own. I think that's like the hardest thing to do. And so with that capstone, it actually helps out a lot. Because I remember I didn't really grill, I forgot who was presenting at the time, but I definitely would ask some questions that he probably would be asked if he was pitching this to like a real company. And just getting that firsthand training, whether you know you're frustrated or not, goes a long way in your job search of just saying, okay, what are my weak points of there? Like, what did I not make, you know, clearly in this presentation? And this is also why people that have backgrounds in sales and everything else that know how to do good presentations can still find themselves in a technical role because presenting is a skill in itself.
It is.
Like that, if you're, for example, too, if you want to do something in threat intel and you're good at presenting, you should try that because I'm telling you, a lot of people in threat intel do not know how to keep people engaged in the conversation. It's just more just talking and you're like, okay, I'm done. Even though I should care about this, I don't care anymore because all you're doing is just talking. So let me just try to wake people up. There we go. All right. Let's see. Somebody just said they got the Google cybersecurity certification. How long should I wait to take C++? Schedule your test. And then that's how you figure out how long you should wait. That's what I would say. Schedule your test. Because you already worked on this knowledge, it should help you pass it. You don't want to put it off. So the longer you say you're going to take it, you're not going to take it. Like even me, like I've had in progress on my resume for the longest for CSSP. And like, I keep like falling off of it because of course it's just not scheduled. And that's what I need to do in order to make myself study. So it don't just go for y'all. It go for me too. So I need to follow the own things that I'm saying. I just
I've been so preoccupied with other stuff, but nah, schedule the test, find a voucher, whatever you can do. I think completing that, I don't know if it gives you the voucher to take Sec Plus, but I think it may give you some money off. I don't know. I could be totally inaccurate. Somebody could look up the terms for me. I haven't looked at that stuff in a while. Oh, this is a good one. The Splunk and Cisco merger. We always see, and I say this because I remember when Phantom was kind of like Phantom before Splunk turned into Splunk Phantom.
Yeah.
And kind of how Phantom changed a little bit once it was bought, just like I believe XOR used to be Demisto.
Yeah.
And on one hand, I've seen Palo Alto do good things with the companies they acquired, because I think they acquired Dig and Talon. So they're buying up all the companies, like they're Thanos right now. So I think Cisco's way of trying to fight back was buying Splunk. Now, I know we saw some layoffs, some other things happen. These things typically happen with mergers and acquisitions. Just, you know, it's not anything new. But what do you think about the merger and acquisition? Do you think they will let Splunk still operate like independently, and will it still be a good product? Or is this where now some other platforms who haven't been as successful as Splunk can start standing out at like some of the mishaps they may make by being taken over by Cisco? What do you think?
So I would say more than likely, because given the amount Cisco paid for it, they're going to more likely let Splunk still be Splunk. I know they're talking about doing some different integrations with some of their XDR products, enhance it. But at the core, I still think Splunk is going to still be the same platform for the most part. There might be some tweaks here and there, but they spend, what, like $28 billion on it? Normally, when companies spend that much money for merger and acquisition, they normally keep the product the same for the most part. If not, they just would have built their own platform. So I don't think there'll be too much of like game-changing changes for inside of Splunk, in my opinion.
Bet. All right, so Betty said Google actually gives you 30% off the Sec Plus test. So there you go. Go ahead and book your test and to try to take it with them. Maybe it's like the next month or two. And then after that, probably don't get any more certs. Focus on some skills. And I actually want to circle back because I know the guy asked about what Splunk cert or something they can get. I know on Splunk's website, there are different pathways you can probably go. And I'll probably try to pull it up while I let you talk in a little bit. But from you guys' breakdown on like how you kind of introduce people to Splunk and probably like a roadmap for them, what do you normally advise people to get for their Splunk certs early on in their career?
Normally, we suggest that for them to get the core user certification, then a power user certification. So the core user certification isn't that hard, but I tell people still to take the exam just to make sure you know the materials. Because one of the issues, or I guess one of the interesting things I always find that people tell me, oh, I know Splunk and cybersecurity, right? I'm like, oh, sure thing. Then on the first like 2 weeks, like, wow, this course is really hard. I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, that's what I told you before you signed up, right? So we always make people start from the analyst track before they go to the engineering side to make sure they have the proper skill set for it. One of the things that if my pet peeve is I work with people, a lot of times my clients that say they know Splunk for cybersecurity and they don't actually know it, right? So normally I suggest towards them core user first, power user. And then once they hit the engineering course, start to study for admin certification. Henry, are you mute?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I forgot I muted. I've been muting in between you talking because my girl's been there going hard. So I've been trying to compensate for that. But what I was saying was that I went to this website because I wanted to show, look at this, a Cisco company. But I wanted to show the visualization of the certifications where it kind of starts at the beginning and then how they get a little bit more advanced. And it kind of tells you the skills you need and related products. I think if you click on it, let's see something. Let's click on this. So it gives you a little bit more information on this, on who should take this exam. So guys, one of the things I see as well with people who are failing to get in cybersecurity is you're not researching enough. And that's why you don't really know what you want to do or what to study. Granted, it's a lot of information out there. Because if you say, I want to get in cybersecurity, I'm going to say, okay, well, what do you want to do in cybersecurity? Because there's many different jobs you can do. And so you have to start off by researching. And how you research and find out different skills is, of course, job descriptions. Job descriptions that have different skills on there. And that's where you probably go to those companies or those terms you don't understand and see what they have to offer. And that's an easy way to kind of understand, like learn different skills. Man, I want to know if I can find that roadmap or not. So yeah, we got the where. Okay, so what are the certifications where like people can actually like probably maybe start doing like their own C2C Splunk type stuff where they have like these certain certifications? Because I know in certain situations, companies may say, "Hey, we want a client to do this, but they have to have like these certifications for them for us to consider them." Now that is a thing on certain jobs.
I would say if you want to do C2C work, get at a minimum at least certified admin. And then if you want to use Splunk Enterprise Security for your clients, get ES, which I got my ES cert last month.
Let's see if this is what I'm looking for. No, it's not. Oh, well, I'm just going to stop sharing. Let me see. It's time to schedule it, Mr.
Oh, Clay. Oh, yeah. I talked to him last month. Yeah.
That's Mr. Lockheed. What's up, Mr. Lockheed?
Good man.
Who's this from? Somebody on LinkedIn. Do you think Cribble, which is a data management engine, is a benefit for companies with big Splunk log ingestions?
Yes.
There's your answer.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot more popular over the past couple of years.
Yeah. I know last year when I was in Vegas, CrippleCon was like right across the street.
Yeah, it's funny because the founders of Splunk made Cribble and they got in trouble because they're like, you guys stole our cold repositories. And I did Cribble stuff. I'm like, that seemed pretty likely from what I saw. It's very similar.
Yeah. I was going to get one of them Splunk certification 2 years ago until they started charging $500 per class when at one point it was free. It was like Splunk Fundamentals 1.
1 and 2, they broke up into like 10 different courses and charged $500 per piece. You can make more money that way.
Yeah. Now, I'm not supposed to say this, but I think I still got some info on Fundamentals 1 and 2. I could be wrong. I guess you got to hit me up to see. The beginner classes were free, but the remaining 5 or 6 became $500 a piece, basically. Yeah, Cribble's a pretty good tool as well.
Oh, Marquise.
Yeah, he's in here. Yeah, I got everybody in here. Let me see what we had on likes on YouTube.
That's text him after this. He can be one of our judges in our capstone next week.
Yeah, that's what he's telling me earlier. Let me pin this to the message real quick. All right, so let's talk about, give them, I know, like you're a Splunk consultant, right?
Yes.
Can you tell them, I guess, about in a high level, like if somebody was looking to be a Splunk consultant, like what your day-to-day is? I'm pretty sure they're going to probably be shocked what your day-to-day is like.
Yeah, it varies and depends. So they had me doing sim and SOAR consulting, basically. So I would say on a day-to-day basis, right, I'll log in, I'll do my stand-up, I'll check in with my team, see what needs to be done for the day. Make sure my client isn't freaking out or something being on fire. And so I'll normally log in and we'll have to either help build up detection rules, help advise them on a new solutions for their environment, either that or try to push out some deployment changes and help to manage their environment. So I currently work for our CMS practice or cyber managed services. So we basically take over the SOC environment and then we manage it for them. So with that, we're having to do CMI compliance or SIM compliance or for common information model. So making sure that their data is being validated towards the data model properly, making sure we're able to tag it, create rules for it, and help them out as need be.
I had muted on the board. Now, would you say that your role does require like a lot of talking and a lot of Zoom or Teams meetings?
Yeah, because I work for a Big Four consulting firm. Meetings are just a part of daily life, basically. It's not as bad as it used to be, because I'm a lot more technical in my role now. But it depends on the client. For like a lot of clients, they'll make you meet. You have a meeting like every 30 minutes, which sucks really badly. It's very annoying. It's stuff that can be in the email like in 5 seconds, but they want to meet with you. And then you'll meet from like 8 to 5 at night, and then you have to do your job afterwards because you were in meetings all day, which sucks.
Yeah. Somebody just said, maybe I missed it, but what Splunk certs are recognized in the industry? I mean, to me, any Splunk certification, because they all come from Splunk. The more important question is, what do you want to do with Splunk? And then that's how you kind of figure out what certifications that you may want to look into, because they do start getting pricey. So you got to have a plan with getting them as well.
Yeah. For example, if you want to do specifically cybersecurity and you want to do like SIEM and SOAR specifically for Splunk, then I would suggest getting Enterprise Security Admin and then getting the SOAR automation one as well. If you want to do cloud stuff with Splunk, get Cloud Admin. You want to be an architect with Splunk, get the Splunk Architect cert. If you want to be a Splunk consultant, then get the Splunk consultant cert, right? It just depends on what you want to do.
So, funny that you said those roles. What have you seen salary rise for some of those roles?
It depends. Specifically for Splunk or just like SIEM and SOAR in general?
We're going to stick with Splunk right now, and then, okay, of course, we can go more, you know, high level after that.
So if you're like a principal Splunk, detective engineer, architect, your total comp can be anywhere from like 150 to probably 275.
I think it could be, I think we're probably going, I don't want to say too low, because I think it depends on the company.
Yeah, it can be higher. For like Deep Watch, that's around their range, because I've interviewed with them pretty recently.
Yeah, I've seen, it really, dang it, like what is going on with my thing? Like I was trying to search something. I was going to Indeed, and then we was going to bring up, like, I typed in, like, Splunk Enterprise, and I was just going to go to, like, the highest, like, salary thing, but for whatever reason, it's not coming up. But, yeah. So, also, since it's an ideal world, since it's engineering, technically, that means, like, you could possibly be done. An ideal world with no calls or none, you probably could be done with your work that you had to do for today, probably in, like, 2 to 3 hours, couldn't it?
Yeah, you can definitely do that.
Have you had days like that, or is it kind of like you kind of make it seem like you busy so they're not trying to give you more work to do?
You have to know how to finesse it, but just to make sure that your client's basically happy. As long as your client's happy and your tasks are getting done, normally your managers don't really have an issue with you. For the most part, it depends what team you are, but for my team, they don't really mind. So as long as my clients are happy, I'm there to answer any calls if need be. You should be fine. Just make sure your phone's next to you. They text you.
Yeah, that's how I used to be. I know, like, when I was, like, not really in the queues, it kind of was like either the meetings I knew I had on that day or I was just handling stuff that was escalated to me. You know, I probably wasn't doing 8 hours of work, but it was really, like, crucial work whenever I had to do the work.
That's how it is for me, too.
Right. And I typically tell people, like, depending on your skill set and where you're at, you can get to a level where you're like not super busy throughout the day, but it really just depends. But some people want to go from zero to going to doing that.
You can. I never talked about this before the call. You just have to make that your life for a couple of years, which is what I did. I didn't go. I didn't party. I worked. I went to school and I ate and I slept. That's it.
Yeah. You see that thing that I got up there now from Lee?
Yeah, that's correct. If you don't know how to actually properly manage the infrastructure around Splunk, it's not going to work properly. The people underestimate how much data they're ingesting. So if their infrastructure isn't set up for that, if the infrastructure is set up to ingest 10 terabytes per day or something, but they're actually generating like 30 terabytes per day, you're going to have issues.
Tell me about it. What are you? So you don't do any of the like the build out of like the log sources and like you said, like the terabytes of like seeing how much is incoming. Or do you work with that part too?
It depends what client. So for one of my live clients, I did. And I was mainly infrastructure. So we would have to either help deploy applications, new configuration files inside their systems. If there's an issue with their servers, we'd be there to troubleshoot it. And then we would build up metrics for that as well. And for other clients, I've worked more as a lead detection engineer, like I'm working on my clients right now. So I'll lead the team meetings. I'll answer any questions the client has, even though they won't be happy with my answer. Even though it's from the Splunk docs, I'm like, hey, this is what Splunk says. But it's a work in progress.
Yeah. So I want to get back on some more security related tasks. Hey guys, remember, like, ask your questions. Like I said, if it's something super crucial, you know, send a super chat. But let's talk about how some of these people may, in a typical way, you know, outside of engineering path, we'll stick to some more security operations, incident response type of things. Like, let's say they're just learning Splunk on their own and they want to do detection engineering. How would they be able to learn how to write detections? Maybe, well, granted, there are tools that can help you do this, but in this situation, maybe we're going to act like Splunk doesn't. I mean, the tool doesn't exist. How would they learn how to write detections for Splunk? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, normally, how I learned was you get to practice every single day on this, basically, which is what I did. So when I was a threat analyst at Publix, every day after lunch, we would go in the meeting room. They gave me a keyboard and like, can I practice this? And that's what I did with Splunk ES every day, right? 9 hours a day. So that's how I got really good at it. So practice is a really big thing. If you get stuck with something, Splunk documentation is probably the best vendor documentation that I've ever seen in my career, honestly. It's very organized. It's very straightforward. It's very easy to search things up inside of it. So probably go like the Splunk Lantern. They have a lot of built-out detection rules that you can use at templates. And then from there, you'll test and tune your rules as need be. So basically, you play around with it, see what it works, see what doesn't work, and then just keep trying to iterate from there to try to get your answers straight.
Yeah, in this scenario, we're going to say maybe they're not like at a job where they use it. Like, so for example, I know through Splunk, you can at least download like a whatever copy of it, but it can like, I think that you can put X amount of data in your little Splunk instance.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you can do like a one-time upload. You can go to like Kaggle or something like that, which we teach our students how to do. And you can download
it's called what?
Kaggle, K-A-G-G-L-E.
Kaggle, okay.
And you can download different data sets. That may vary. We do game data sets, bakery stuff, Linux stuff, infrastructure stuff from around the state. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I know like you can download regular Splunk. Can you download like regular like Splunk ES for free?
Oh, no. What's... It's the second mortgage to get that honorary.
So outside of like you've been able to do like notables and everything else, what is the biggest difference for the regular Splunk and then Splunk ES?
So with Splunk ES, you can do the correlation searches, right? But you can't do normally inside of Splunk Enterprise. So Splunk Enterprise is a log management platform, and Splunk Enterprise Security is a SIEM platform. You can't just purchase Splunk Enterprise Security. You need to have Splunk Enterprise first, right? So Splunk Enterprise can be for DevOps operations, it can be for sales, and these are BI stuff. So there's a lot of different use cases for it. Splunk Enterprise Security isn't just for security use cases. That's what it's designed to do. So all that extra functionality with correlation searches, building out detection rules, right? Certain dashboards, certain features and functionalities, right? SOAR integration, that's mainly for Splunk Enterprise Security.
Yeah, and so this is one of why, and then we'll get some pushback right here, but this is why I tell people, especially if it's based on cost and what they can afford, I say, hey, you can go learn Sentinel as a SIEM platform for much cheaper than Splunk.
That would be correct.
And I think it's just because of ease of use. If I go into Azure and say, hey, I want to create Sentinel, it's done like that. And then you can start learning how to put logs in there and throw stuff in there. Like, you know, I think it's a little bit more feasible way of doing that. Because to me, and this is from an IR SecOps perspective, if you know what you're looking for, you can use any SIEM platform. I really don't like when job descriptions say, oh, must know how to use Splunk or this and that. I'm like, if the person understands how to answer the question and what to look for, they'll be fine on any SIM. They'll just have to figure out
the how syntax, to search in it. Yeah, the syntax work.
They'll be all right. And a lot of people will try to make you a stickler for like, okay, I've never seen this, but if you give me these scenario questions, I'm going to knock them out of the park, regardless of what SIM platform you use. Like, hey, like for example, there are EDRs that you just will not be able to get your hands on by yourself. Like, you're not going to be able to touch Tanium. You're not going to be able to touch CrowdStrike. You're not going to be able to touch SentinelOne. Now, you can't touch Defender. That's what I'm saying. That's the only reason, like, I just really rock with Microsoft, because they'll let you at least use all these things on your own in an environment where the other places are gatekept. Which, in a way, if you got this experience, you know people who aren't in the field can't get the experience. It gives you a leg up on just role, just based off of what it is. Now, you can embellish and say you know how to use CrowdStrike, as long as they don't have to put it in front of you and tell you how to navigate it.
Yeah.
I mean, so you could test your luck.
Thankfully, we have a partnership with SentinelOne, so our students get to use their platform.
Oh, word. I've used SentinelOne a little bit. I haven't used it in years, so I don't know what upgrades or changes it's been, but I remember at one point in time, it really was doing its thing. I don't think it'll ever capture like market share from CrowdStrike, but I think it still can trend in the right direction if it keeps getting better.
That's super cool. I like what it can do.
So Justin said, if he's going to pay the bread, he'll rather pay you.
I appreciate that.
And Barra is asking about TryHackMe. I guess what about it? I have played with Splunk and other SIMs as experience. I mean, you can. You use it. But the only thing I don't like about TryHackMe, TryHackMe teaches you bad habits. TryHackMe will tell you to wild card some crap and search for it, because they know their data is a limited data set. It's not like in an environment where stuff is coming in. You can't just go into an environment and wild card everything. So I wish they would show you guys how to figure out what's your index, what's your source types, yada, 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 so you can make your searches better than just wild carding some crap. And then your search taking forever, or it gets put in the queue, or an admin stops and say, hey man, you're using too much data. Like, you need to figure out what you're looking for. You can't just do that here.
Yeah. That's one of my pet peeves in general. When people say, oh, Kenneth, why would I pay all this money for you to train me? I can get it done for free. I tell everyone, nothing's ever free, right? There's some cost towards it, right? It's either time or money, right? A lot of like TryHackMe resources, right? It's a good place to start out. But a lot of the best practice and a lot of little niche things that I've learned the hard way, I can teach you that in like 5 seconds, and compared to you spending months to try to learn that by yourself. And that's what you pay when you get with me, basically, right? Which is why we do the capstones, right? But a lot of that, you can't like do that by yourself, right? TryHackMe is not going to do that for you, which is why we do it for our students.
Yeah, I have some some things. I don't know if I make content off of it soon, but Marquise and I are working on some ways that we can enhance people using platforms like the TryHackMe's and Hack the Boxes. And so we're working on that. And eventually maybe that'll come out to help some people out with that. Because you don't know what you don't know. Like you said, there is going to be some type of price on something, because why wouldn't you want to invest in yourself and pay for something? Like, everything can't be free. It just can't. Like, I mean, in the perfect world, it could be. But then people wouldn't make any money, then they can take care of their family. We skipped this person. SOC Kokage says, is a Splunk power user worth it for someone specifically interested in being a SOC analyst role? I mean, yeah, I can't say it's going to hurt you against it. I think it'll help you look good on your resume.
Yeah, if your firm's asking for it, they may require that for you to get promoted to like a senior analyst, and I would definitely get it if that's the case.
Patrick says, he's been trying to knock out a Splunk course, certified user course on Udemy. I even use ChatGPT to make a study guide too. Like I said, they used to have the stuff. I'm pretty sure the material has not changed much over the years. It's like pretty much kind of the same stuff. So also, I think the only problem sometimes with like using, and maybe Pat is still on here watching, is using those, like the Udemy's and everything else, is that if you're not actually touching the SIM and you just theory knowledge, I don't think it helps you that much in the long run. If you want to actually do something with Splunk, you're just learning the theory behind it, but not what actually happens when you do the stuff it's telling you to do.
Yeah. Note to anyone that wants to do Splunk, right, or any similar sort of technology, I can tell really quickly when someone's BSing me, right? And you can tell that really quickly, too, when you did the capstone, Andre. It's very obvious if you don't prepare or you never actually touch the platform hands-on. So don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can try, but you can't BS nothing. Because you're going to ask you questions that you would need to know. Like, why do I need this? Or why can't I just do this? Or that. Let's see. He said, oh, he's going along with it. He plans to get a rep plan. So I'm assuming that means that he has a Splunk instance that he's possibly using with the core user. So that's cool. So, and here's a fun word. We talked about detections, but like use cases. How had you have in the past come up with use cases? Has it just been stuff from you researching? Have you been collaborating with threat intelligence? Like, what's been like your go-to of that? Like, because I will tell you, sometimes on a job interview, you maybe ask something about detections and use cases, even as a level one, they may ask you. And so you're going to have to give them a good answer of your understanding of it.
So specifically inside of Splunk, a use case basically is just a saved search, right? The use case may be a dashboard panel, maybe an alert, it may be a report, right? So normally what we do is, depending on our maturity level for our clients, right, we'll have like a list of use cases that they should have based on the data they're ingesting, right? So I wouldn't suggest for them to build a use case for Palo Alto if they have checkpoint logs, right? That doesn't make any sense. Normally like the standard ones, they'll ask for like Linux OS logs, Windows OS logs, their EDR platform, so Cortex XDR, CrowdStrike, SentinelOne, whatever the case may be. And then they might also ask for their malware analysis logs if they have network logs for their routers, switchers, or servers, stuff like that. Syslogs, and then like their cloud server logs, like AWS, Azure, or like GCP stuff.
Right. So here's a fun one. How do you push back on management that's telling you to put like a one-to-one type of notable in? Like the notable is literally somebody logged into their computer today. That's all it is. Like it's not a lot of context. It's not somebody logged into their computer today from an area that they previously weren't seen in and they failed MFA 5 times. It's not like that. It's just one instance. Like, how do you push back on them on telling you to implement notables that you know for a fact wouldn't be beneficial to the people that would be triaging those?
It depends on how early our clients are. If they're giving me a lot of pushback, I'm like, all right, I'm like, let's implement it. Then once we get like 1,000 alerts like in 10 minutes, like, oh, whoa, it's like, it's way too much. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I know. Then we change it back, right?
Yeah. I'm big on saying, hey, I'll put in notes, hey, this is not actionable. It's a waste of time. This is what happened. If I see it over amount of time, I'll do that. There are like, and then other ones is like, we was talking about getting new tools, or you got these new tools that come in. And so now almost all the default rules and the tools on, and you just getting alerted on everything. You're like, bro, what are we doing here? If I'm focusing on all this stuff, the day it's actually legitimate, we'll miss it. Like that's the epitome of crying wolf and SecOps. It's like a lot of bad rules to where you're focusing on these bad rules. So every time you look at this thing, it's been a low for the longest and you're just disregarding it. And so by the time your bias comes in, it's a true positive. It's too late. And then they want to get mad at you. But really, it's on them because you put garbage out for 3 months. Now all of a sudden, it's supposed to be good. And y'all are increasing the amount of logs they put in the SIM and alerts, but not making them more enriched and more efficient.
Yeah, firms will do that a lot. They don't have a plan. They don't understand their baseline for what it actually is, right? And if you don't understand your baseline, how can you know what is abnormal behavior if you don't know what normal behavior is inside your environment? And that, then going back to documentation, which they never have for some odd reason. I don't know why.
Tribal knowledge. You got to go find the person that found the person who did the role 5-4 years ago and hope they still the company and find out the information just for them to say, I don't remember.
I remember from one of my last clients, they were a bank that was getting bought out, and they only had, they fired or they laid off everyone from their Splunk team. So there was just one Splunk architect for their entire environment. They're ingesting like 10 terabytes per day, I think. I felt so bad for him. He was always busy. I felt really bad for him.
We had a very specific question over here for you. It says, can you explain to users who would like to get their Splunk ES certification, what frameworks do you recommend for building effective detection rules in Splunk ES?
So normally I suggest for them either NIST or MITRE. Those are the two most common ones. A lot of government agencies use that as well. A lot of financial institutions will use that. For MITRE, it helps you to map out and think like the attackers do and follow their thought process. There's a lot of direct integrations with that inside of Splunk and Splunk Enterprise Security and then SOAR as well. And then for NIST, that's a really big for GRC stuff. So a lot of reason for compliance purposes. I've helped my clients map out their log sources towards NIST. And normally with NIST, right, you want to have to go from being reactive to proactive, meaning you want to actually start to prevent attacks from happening, right? So the more of your logs are inside the source, right, for proactive, the better it is for your company.
No, that's for sure. I've been asked about MITRE before, and in a funny way, I guess, but I was like, look, every notable CrowdStrike detection, whatever like that, has always been mapped to something in MITRE. So I was like, go back to that, and you can see what it's attempting to do. But it just always goes into that, whatever they were trying to make, just it didn't hit what it's supposed to be on. And I kind of hate that. And I don't want to get you in trouble with this. Are there any funny client interactions that you could possibly talk about at a high level without getting yourself in trouble? If it's not, plead the fifth, and then you don't have to say it.
I'll plead the fifth. My company doesn't like me anyway, so I'm sure I get in trouble.
Yeah, because they're like, hey, we seen you on live on LinkedIn. I always talk about just McAfee and just how trash that was of just going in there. Like, I was working through like WannaCry. Like, that was my welcome into the world.
Oh,
damn. WannaCry. It'd be similar to starting out as a, you know, doing IR work or being a SOC analyst when like Log4Shell happened. And like, your company's like stuff is not good at all. And like, you're literally dealing with Log4Shell for like months and weeks at a time. But for us, literally, that's all we did. Check to see if we seen any, like, I forgot the two signatures that was there for WannaCry. And we saw that, sent it to the NOC, have them turn off those hosts and then get them patched and stuff. Like, that's it. That's all we was doing. We had a sim that you had to log into the five different locations and five different tabs.
Damn.
It was horrible. Like, we had them, like, when I tell you, these dudes spent a lot of money. I'll go back in my Google photos and show you, like, they spent the money on a nice looking sock just to lay us off, like, right after Christmas. I was like, bruh, y'all could have used that money for training. Like, we never could find anybody, like, every time we would say, hey, who has used this sim? Can you guys bring them in and show us how to use this? They never could. Like, they were bringing professional services to us. Professional services was coming in there talking to us about the art of war and everything else. And we was like, this is all good, fam. But how do we do this with this tool? Right, training. It was no training. So when I have a consult with a lot of people, I tell them a lot of times, like, hey, I ain't going to hold you, but you might not even get no training, to be honest. You might just have to thug it out and figure it out. But what that job did was it showed me everything you shouldn't do in the SOC. And then the next job literally was like everything you should do. And the scariest thing for me at the time was going to a new job at Optiv, and we were on the contract, but the clients made the new SOC analysts like perform They gave us like 10 use cases and come up with like response actions for these. And so we didn't have like time to ask client like contextual questions about the stuff they gave us. But we went super in depth at the time. And it was so funny. Like we knocked it out of the park. Our stuff was better than their current supplier, who was DXC at the time.
Oh, nice.
No, it was not nice. DXC waited up until almost it was time for us. Like, so this was, I got hired, started June 1st, 2018. We were set to take over the contract July 1st, 2018, 12 a.m. They waited like a couple of days, like right before that to give people access. Only like three or four of us had access at 12 a.m. So we were all there. We didn't have enough time to even be in the environment yet. We were just like, it was crazy. I probably was up. I probably worked that first week on that client, probably like 40, 50, 60 hours.
Dang.
Like, because at the time I had no kids or nothing. So that's also how I started off doing night shift because I was in grad school too. But it was a fun experience. I mean, coming in at that time, the office was like probably like 5 minutes from my house. Like the good days when like going to the office wasn't bad because you stayed right where you worked. But yeah, I was like, bruh. So, but it was cool. It was a learning experience. It's like one of those things I always like, if I'm going into different interviews, I'm always talking about that experience because it's like, when I let them know who it was for, it was like, oh, okay. We know they have like a solid team over there and they got some good stuff over there. So I just tell you like every situation will not be ideal, but it's about what you make it.
That's true.
Orville Henry says, I am 37. I started IT late. I feel like I could make it tapping in with you guys. Yeah, I mean, it's no right or wrong age to start. I've seen people start around the age. I've seen people start later than that and get in. And it's really about putting your best foot forward and putting the effort in to learn new material. You're going to, at this point, be a lifelong learner. And so that's what you're just going to have to focus on is like learn new things. Like right now, we're talking about Splunk. In 5 years, we could be talking about another SIM platform or something that utilizes AI more. Speaking of, I actually want you to touch on that. What have you been seeing from what Splunk is going to be using AI for and like course machine learning and all that good stuff? Like what have you been seeing for that?
So I know they want to like enhance some of the, what is it, the machine learning toolkit they have to automate some of their processes and make their searches better. So I know that they might come up with a feature where you can kind of auto-write some of your SQL searches. So I know they've been trying to develop that. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that works. I'm going to guess their first edition will be pretty crappy, like all AI stuff is. It'll get better over time.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. I remember I used to spend some times, like Marquise can attest to this, to do something simple one time in Splunk. It was something small that whatever my code or something was working. But, you know, he helped me out. He helped me figure it out. I think I asked you one time too. But that would help, though. Because like, it's like a lot of times I know exactly what I want. But sometimes even going through the documentation, I'm just not able to figure out what it is. And I think at that time I didn't have, like, I used to be spoiled with like a freaking savant, a Splunk savant. Like he knew how to do everything, set everything up. And I used to learn from him. I'd be like, yo, John, I got to here, here, and here. Like, what am I missing? And he'd be like, yo, got time for a quick Zoom? And then that's how I would learn stuff. That's a real key. Like I'll tell anybody right now, if you start a new job or about to start one, hopefully you can find somebody that's smarter than you or like the best person there and be their friend or show yourself worthy to be their friend. And they should help you actually fast track some more. Wicked Zeus, just became an IT support analyst. Your videos gave me motivation and somewhat a path to get to cyber and higher tech. Ah, man, shout out to you, man. Shout out to you. That's what it was. It was renaming the field. It was a simple thing. I think I had the table or the rename. I couldn't remember. I had it out of order. So when it was trying to call it, and then I was like, you're right. Let me switch it at that. Because at that time, I think I had just started back being a Splunk every day. Because it was a period of time where like I was doing like a lot of GRC stuff and all these other tools. And I wasn't really getting to do the stuff I used to do, and I had got really rusty. And that's something else I seen. People will go through like your course, or they'll do all this try hack me stuff. Okay, hang on, let me read what they say. Do you ever do LinkedIn resume reviews? I work full time, but in the last year of my free time, I've done a Google search and got sick plus, been having a hard time choosing my next move. Yes, I do. Matter of fact, I used to do them like as a standalone service for like LinkedIn reviews, but now like I'll do a brief one, like do a consult. And also for the resume stuff, I have a couple of videos where I'm reviewing my own resume. I have a video where I'm reviewing like a critique and like a subscriber's resume. And then I have a whole live session that I did with Erica and Tiara, my other two career coach friends. And we pretty much redacted people's information and reacted to their resumes live. So if you go to my live tab in my channel, you can check out like the career coaches react to like resumes. And like, it's really, of course, it's entertaining, but it's top tier information as well. If you want to like kind of pitch your resume against some of the things that we saw in there. Here you go. Yeah, he said you had the table first, but you couldn't remember if you had to rename it before the table or afterwards. Yeah, I couldn't remember it. But yeah, what I see too is like people will gain these new skills and then stop doing the stuff they've been doing every day. So now a month or two after that, they don't really retain the information because they're not doing it every day. And now when they finally get the when they finally get the interview, it gets a little tough for them. So I always try to tell people in consults, yo, whatever you're learning, after you finish your course or whatever, try to do that stuff 20 minutes, 30 minutes a day just to kind of stay tight with it if you're not doing it daily. If not, you'll forget and you have to start all over again from like trying to do that stuff. So I was like,
yeah,
please try to like find some new stuff to do. Like get a, what's this tool? Dang it. I can't even think of the tool that it's another tool that I found for projects, but you can like get some type of Trello, Jira, and some of the things and like put some projects on there. So you kind of stay active. Let's see. I know we got some other questions on there. So Sakokage says, what are some growing pains when you see a new environment? Are there normalities or SPL commands that work for every customer? So these are two questions. With the experience and seeing a new environment, you'll be fine because you have enough experience based. let me land this plane. I'll make it even easier. Let me go solo real quick. I ain't been solo all night. So with experience, it gets easier because you can fill in the gaps that a new person can't. So when a new person starts in their environment, every alert they see in a sim, they're going to think it's bad. And they're going to be like a dog trying to chase a car. An experienced person with 3, 4, 5 years in, they already know how to go back through and look at trends and see if this is even something they should work on. They know how to go through emails, tickets, team messages, documentation, and try to find all the information they can before they even have to possibly escalate it. And as time goes on, after a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, they really start getting a feel for their shift and what happens. And so it's like, I'll make this easy for you. You at your house, you get home every day at, you know, 8 p.m., your girl get there at 8:30. And so that's every day. But now all of a sudden, this new car you don't recognize come up to your house at 9:15. And so you're going, your antenna's going to go off. It's like, man, what is this? Who is this person? Or what's going on? You're going to kind of be ready to defend or what's going on. So in the environment, it's the same thing. Like you'll be there. Okay. I already know what's happened. Now it's something that you don't recognize that's came in, and whether it's a low, medium, critical, or high, you're going to look into it. It's like, I've never seen that before. What is going on? And then now you're going to try to, based on the data that you got and the activity you got, you're going to make a fair decision if this should be escalated or not. So I hope that answers your question. And then he asked about the normalities for the SPL commands. I mean, there are simple commands, and I'm bringing Kenneth up here, searches that you can run to find the fields that you want. So where this, like I was talking about earlier, indexes and source types, that'll definitely let you know what you have in the environment, can make it easier on you on the search. Now, some people may have their field names named different things, but you can pretty much find those out. And then you can start really crafting out like your different searches that you may use on a regular. But for the most part, A lot of companies may name stuff the same just for normalization, and makes it easier for people to come in right away and start searching in the environment.
Yeah, pretty accurate. I would say there are base searches that I have saved that I'll use for different client environments, and then we'll tweak it for whatever the needs they have, because their fields may be slightly different or named slightly different. So you have to tweak and tune your searches as need be.
Right. Yeah, Notion is one of them, but it's another site. I was telling Marquise about it, and it's pretty cool. I found it, and I was looking through my bookmarks, and I do not see it on here, whatever. So if I can't find it, I'll probably put it on my community tab. But it's a cool, Darius Green says, yes, that definitely messed me up. I got rusty after getting a Google security certification and passed Security Plus. You must study every day to keep the knowledge. Yeah. Thanks for all the advice. I've been staying busy with the Blue Team Level 1 free content and Hack the Box sock path. Nice. Hit the ground running with data models and pivot tables. Yeah, this is going live on his YouTube page. Okay. And another thing I did want to talk about is like the good thing that I haven't used Hack the Box, but I know Try Hack Me uses some of the Boss of the SOC data sets. Okay. And in your own environment, you can set up Boss of the SOC stuff. Before I was using Try Hack Me way back in the day, I was using INE. I liked how INE kind of broke down the Boss of the SOC better back then versus Try Hack Me. I have an old video of me doing that Boss of the SOC exercise on there. But Boss of the SOC is definitely a good way to get your skills up of analyzing everything and kind of just figuring stuff out on what to do in an incident. Now, granted, the only thing that, well, it could be two things. In your own environment, you'll have context for stuff. But if you're like some type of consultant and you work for companies that come respond for environments you have no idea about, stuff will help you. It'll help you with that because you'll kind of have things that you'll go look for in the environment to see, hey, what's going on? Let me find patient zero. And so that's kind of what Boss of the SOC is about. And it could definitely help those skill sets. And I used to put it like in job applications, they were saying like, if do you have links or something you want us to check out? I used to send that to recruiters and say, hey, tell them to look at this. Cause I would be talking through the investigation and saying, this is why I would do this. This is such I'm looking here and I'm doing this OSINT right here. And here's like my notes that I've came up with like afterwards. So this would help me get interviews because say, okay, he's not just completing it. He's talking through it. So he understands why he's doing it. And so that's a big thing that people run into when they try to go blue team is they don't really understand the ins and outs of everything. They got all these different skill sets, but they don't know how to make a form a straight line just yet. That's the thing. The tool is called Linear. It's called Linear. Hmm. It's similar to like Notion and stuff, but it's pretty cool. This person said, is it worth updating the Splunk certificate from the old cert, Splunk Fundamentals 7.1 to Splunk Core? I mean, unless you just want to. I mean, I guess we need to know what you want to do with Splunk in order to answer those things. And we got like 5 or 10 more minutes left, guys. I want you to get your questions in before I let Mr. Kenneth go. And I thought I did send you an invite to the Linear Project. It's pretty much project management software. So if you and a friend want to do something, this is how Marquise and I are going to work on this DFI Iris stuff of like helping y'all take some of this free, well, I won't say free stuff, but this e-learning to the next level, some stuff that they're leaving out that they are not showing you to be ready to work in a company. Also, guys, you saw that I did pin my link. Like, if you want to learn more stuff about ECA, you can click my link. And then also, I have Kenneth's LinkedIn on there, and I need to add ECA stuff underneath your thing in the description so people can go to your website. She says, my real name's Kiara, says, what would you say is a good resource to hands-on material? Okay, Kiara, I need you to try to get a little bit more specific with that question as far as hands-on material pertaining to what. And you may not know what the material is, but if you do know what you want to do, try to get more specific. That way we could probably give you a solution for that.
It's similar sort of than I would say, shameless plug.
So, yeah, hopefully she tells us that. But, yeah, while we are waiting on somebody to ask us a question, I finally started watching your show again.
My Hero?
Yeah.
Well, what season are you on?
The last season.
Season 7?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I kind of know what's going to happen already. I just went to like Anime Uproar and just listened to them because I don't have time to keep up with it. Okay, Darius Green said, I joined kind of late, but what made y'all want to go into cybersecurity? And do you think this is a secure job for people to go into for the future? So many jobs are becoming obsolete because of AI. So he's answered that on my channel before. I'll let him give a brief like answer to this. I got into it because I took a forensics class, and once I found out stuff you delete not really gone, I said, I want to get in that field. So that's a short answer for you.
For me, it was the fact that I didn't feel I wanted to do IT. I didn't realize cybersecurity was a thing until I got towards my junior year of college. And then I had the opportunity to meet one of my directors for Public Supermarkets for security. This is why I tell people to let people know what your true desires are so they're able to speak on your behalf when you're not in the room. That's what I've always done. That's why I teach our students. And so someone remembered that I want to do cybersecurity. I got the intro. And then from there, I've just been studying ever since for it. I got a job as a threat intelligence analyst at Publix as an intern. I loved it. That was one of the best jobs I've ever had in my entire life. I almost cried on my last day there because I did not want to leave. I told my manager, I'm like, Dan, I'm like, I will literally scrub the toilets every single day if I can stay here. I was not joking. I love that job. But yeah, I think being cybersecurity is really cool. It's a lot of learning, which I like a lot.
Yeah. So as for the AI thing, I would suggest learning more about AI to not be so, I don't want to say scared, or maybe say like scared, fearful of like a job outlook. What was that?
Oh, I'll just say probably like worried is the biggest thing about people.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it still is going to take people that know how to implement the AI to use it correctly. So I would definitely say just kind of look at it like, here you go, this is the word we're using. But look for use cases AI can be used for in security. Matter of fact, I did an episode with Ron Smith for his company Q Function, where he talks about he uses AI language learning models to help people come up for user behavior analytics and things like that to kind of stop threats, especially from the inside, or preventing them before they happen. So kind of just go research some things you can actually do with AI and security before you kind of like think like everything will be obsolete, because the day that they just trust AI to do everything is like the day everybody's like company is going to go down, because there are new subsets of jobs that are going to be made just for making sure, hey, the information that AI is putting out there, is it secure? Is it the right stuff? Has somebody poisoned it? Give you the wrong code, like, hey, you was talking about Splunk using AI to make queries, like if something happens to it and now it's sending out some malicious stuff that making some you don't know what it is in the search bar and scheduling you like a report to send out to the wrong person, like a lot of crap can happen. But yeah, she said data analytics, but then later on Kiara said she wanted a security analyst. What resources do you use for hands-on practice? So for you, if you're starting from nothing right now, I would advise the Google cybersecurity certification, and only because it's going to introduce you, I believe it's what, eight lessons, eight domains it's introducing to you on there. One of them actually is dealing with like SQL, because you talk about data analytics. You actually can do security data analytics work. A lot of people don't realize that. That's a big one. Like all the data is coming in. People want to know about these threats, and they love people that know how to use Tableau, Power BI, SQL, and all the other data stuff. So I would say start off with the Google cybersecurity certification, and it's very cheap. You can check out my review video of it. I think I got a link that'll like let you get like 10% off. I don't know, but I think it's like free if you finish it within like 2 weeks. So I would definitely say start with that first if you don't have a lot of experience. So I hope to help you out, Kiara. Do you recommend Blue Team Level 1 or CISA in regards to growing your knowledge as a SOC analyst? Blue Team Level 1, hands down. It's a practical certification. So Whereas on the CISA, I had the CISA before, as though it's a great blue team cert, it's not hands-on. So especially for people who, at the time, I didn't really have to get blue team level one because I was working in the SOC, so it didn't matter. But if you're not working in the SOC and you need to prove that you have the aptitude to work there, get the blue team level one. That's what I would recommend for that. That one or the cyber defenders. All right. To be a Splunk architect, what would my path be? I'm new in the process of studying for Security Plus, no technical background.
I'll let Kenneth take that one. You're gonna need a technical background to become a Splunk architect. You can't skip that step. I would say it depends on how much you're willing to dedicate towards getting it. It may be probably between 3 to 5 years if you have no technical background as it is right now. But yeah, you can't skip those steps. You're going to need to know Linux inside and out to do Splunk architect work. Have really good soft skills as well. A lot of times you're going to have to explain what you've built out towards your client. If you can't do that, then they won't approve it. And if you can't get billed for it, your client's not going to want to have you on board. So Splunk architect is like one of the highest level ones for Splunk to get. So it takes a while to get it.
Yeah, I really would just suggest setting you a call up with Kenneth and going from there to get a real game plan. Okay, so she's on number 6 out of 8. Good. So, Kiara, do this. Make a mental note of all the lessons you really enjoyed and then start looking more into those lessons onto what you can do cybersecurity with those. And you could even get a little bit more granular and find people on LinkedIn that do those jobs. Reach out to them. Buy them some coffee. See what they do on their day-to-day. And then you start figuring out if you want to do one of those jobs. Then you could build out a more specific path on what you need to learn to do the job that you want to do. So if you do that, that'll make it a little bit easier on you than trying to figure out all these different things to learn, because it makes it super hard to do. Trust me on this one. Yo, what up, Gabe? Shout out. Look, hey, y'all, shout out to the new director of, I want to say OT at Jacobs. My guy Gabe right here. Struggle security. You know, we be struggling in security. Cyber just says the blue team level one cert good for as a new grad. We kind of just covered this. It's more geared to blue team type of roles. So if you want to be on blue team, then I would say yes. I've had clients that got the blue team level one and they started like getting interviews, and managers and interviewers were impressed that they were like going through that certification, becomes more popular. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, that's what I suggest. I suggest mostly simple steps. And like, you know, I'm a boxing fan, y'all. So like, you can try to do all that fancy stuff you want to, but once you miss the fundamentals, you're going to always win the fight. Like, if you got bad fundamental flaws, you're not going to get far in your career. So it's the same thing when it comes to my advice. I'm not going to try to go tell you to go do all this stuff that you're not going to remember. Like, the simple stuff in the beginning is going to help you out. It'll give you a better clear path on what you want to do. Versus some of the other advice you may get out there. So yeah, try it that way first. And then if that way doesn't work, that's when you like go find somebody who could give you like some paid guidance, because that's like their job, their point to really make sure you succeed.
I do boxing, kickboxing. I can attest towards that as well. Fundamentals are very important.
Yeah, man. You gotta go listen to the advice from Michael J. White. All right. Is the Hack the Box CDSA good for soft skills? Somebody just mentioned that to me in a consultation, and I have not reviewed what is covered in it, but from what I saw on the website, it seemed like it is. I just don't know much about it to recommend it just yet. So one day I'm probably going to sign up for Hack the Box and just see if I can go through the stuff and see what it entails. That way I can give an honest opinion on it. Joe Fields, just saying, what's up? Thank you both for all the info. This is my first time catching it live. No, I appreciate you, bro. Appreciate you. Yeah, man. You can hear more about Kenneth's story on my actual podcast, The Textual Talk, where he talks about he went from Publix to working for a Big Four accounting firm as a cybersecurity consultant. So you can definitely check that out. Okay. Once you get into a new role in the SOC, generally, how is the onboarding? Do they just throw you straight in, or is there a week or two to let you know how things are done? Depends on the company, bro. Depends on the company and what level they bring you at. If they bring you in as a senior or principal type of level person, you're not getting that much training because they expect you to know the stuff. If this is supposed to be your first job, you're probably going to have a month or two, maybe. A good company will give you 90 days and they'll actually train you the right way. But a lot of companies will not train you. And if you're not catching on early on, they may start saying, we might have hired the wrong person. And I've seen this happen before. So don't be scared. But if you're confident in what you know how to do, you should be fine. But in a perfect world, you probably get, you know, 30 to 90 days of training. In a perfect world. So I hadn't seen that in a while. Normally, I'm just thrown in. Yes, I would suggest getting a Linux cert. I would suggest learning Linux in any path in cybersecurity because Linux is needed. Like, definitely learn Linux, like for sure. And then send up your Linux environment and send that stuff into your Splunk or Sentinel instance. All right, we got like 3 minutes left for questions. Let's make sure y'all get these things in here. I know some of y'all got to go to work. My people on the East Coast is pretty much, 9:30 just about for y'all?
It's bedtime.
Somebody just asked about that. Or just Redhead. I'll go Redhead over Linux Plus. I'll go Redhead over Linux Plus for sure. You see that in a lot of job descriptions and it's much more money. But just knowing Linux in general can still help you stand out. And, you know, learning some scripting. We was talking about SQL, so learning SQL, some Python, definitely pretty good. Like, I definitely plan on learning SQL a lot more because what you'll find out, too, is some of these companies don't have typical SIMs. And so they're using, like data lakes and things of that nature to where they're using SQL to do these big queries. And so they like people that know how to use SQL. All right, let's see. I think we're winding down. I'm going to have the timestamps on here sometime tonight or tomorrow so you guys can know what parts to click on and probably get past the long intro. And like I said, you'll definitely want to see what's going to be on the Patreon for this guest episode. You guys will never guess it. It's a good one. And I think you'll get a lot of stuff out of that one and the next Patreon episode. So I appreciate everybody for tuning in. We're going to do more of these live streams throughout the months just to tap in with y'all. Actually plan to do some more of the late night live streams with the crew where we're talking about these breaches and everything else. Like, what happened that was just funny? They just outlawed people from using Kaspersky antivirus, which I don't know why you would still be using that. Advanced Auto Parts was leaked. Let me see something. It was something funny. I know somebody I should have shared with y'all. Let me see real quick before I get out of here. Let me see. I think that was the biggest one. Because I was telling who was that? Lee about the Kaspersky stuff. Oh, yeah. And also the big... CDK Global was hacked while recovering from a cyber attack. Man, that's crazy. And, man, this is the real implication. So look up CDK Global hack because you'll see also the car dealerships are facing an outage with that stuff too. So, yeah, that's just, hey, all I call it is job security. That's what I call it. But I appreciate all y'all, man. Until next time, we out. Peace.
See you guys.